Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. We continue our catch-up of the Mumbrella Question Time series. Today we're in Sydney for our November the 10th Question Time. As you're about to hear, we discuss how to find and retain good talent, the biggest factors holding back creativity and innovation in Australia, challenges and disappointments in 2010, and women struggle to get the top creative roles. Good morning again. Let me tell you a little bit about our panel. Henry Tager, sitting to my immediate left, he recently became president of the MFA, which represents most of Australia's major media agencies. He also heads up Interpublic's Media Brands, which is the umbrella company which covers Universal McCann, or UM, as you seem to call yourselves these days, Initiative, Search Operation Reprise, amongst many other things. Next to Henry is Mark Collis, a former executive creator director, has arguably a unique role. I can't think of anyone in Australia who's doing quite the same role as Mark now. He's Telstra's director of creative brand and strategy, so very much a creative voice within one of Australia's biggest brands. Turning to my other side, Deborah Thomas is one of Australia's most celebrated and experienced editorial voices. Recently stepped into the relatively new role of ACP, of General Manager of Media, Public Affairs and Brand Development. Previously edited a string of Australia's best-known magazines, including Clio, Mode and Elle, and a decade as Editor-in-Chief of Australian Women's Weekly. And on the end, Darren Woolley. He heads up consultancy Trinity P3. In a nutshell, and these are my words rather than Darren's, so do tell me if I'm wrong, he helps brands find agencies and then manage those relationships. You may also remember the debate earlier this year over whether that made him a bottom feeder, which he robustly argued wasn't the case. So we'll get to the questions, and as sponsor, S2M get the first question. So Mary Mayer from S2M, if we can get a microphone in Mary's direction.
I'm Jim Little-Jones. I work in search and media at S2M, and Mary's lost her voice. So with all the talk of the industry facing a talent crisis, what is your company doing to make sure you get and retain the best people? What should you be doing?
Let's maybe start with Henry for that one, please.
I did see that question last night. In a crisis, there's always winners and losers. So what we're doing is doing our best to be a winner in the crisis. A lot of people are talking about recruitment, retention. we are focusing on respect. And I think even, you know, referring to talent referring to our people as talent is maybe a little disrespectful. And, you know, we're making really big efforts and serious investments in showing respect to people and giving everybody a bit of individuality, a personal plan, and trying to be ahead of you know, their issues as a company. So it's a challenge, but it's in our view, it's actually a really big opportunity.
And Mark?
Well, I'm only new to Telstra, so I've only been there 6 months, but the thing that impressed me when I got into Telstra was the amount of talent that's there. So I don't know if we've been facing that much of a talent drain. And I suppose as the country's biggest telco, I think we attract really top quality people. So the people that I've come across within the business are really quite amazing, actually. I've been humbled by the amount of talent at Telstra. So I personally haven't seen this kind of talent drain. I'm aware of it across other sectors, but I think for Telstra, we haven't really been too impacted by that.
And what would your advice be? Obviously, you've worked at creative agencies as well. In terms of retaining good staff, what strategies work for you or have worked for you?
Well, I think it's just about personal management and giving people the opportunity to do great things. I've always kind of run my departments on the basis of, you know, encouraging people to step out of their comfort zones and do great work. So I think it's just offering people the ability to kind of take ownership of what they're doing and be fantastic, you know. So, yeah. And I think from the advertising perspective, Australia is quite an attractive proposition for the rest of the globe. So, you know, I've worked overseas in many countries overseas, and it's always spoken about as being a place that people would like to come and work and experience. So I think the question of getting good talent here isn't as difficult as that. I think when you're bringing talent in from overseas, it's about how you keep them here and kind of dealing with that, dealing with some of those cultural differences. But, yeah.
Put the same question to Deborah.
I think it's critical that managers and managers of departments are always on the lookout for the talent and certainly are able to grow that talent. One of the ways that I look at it was I started in magazines under Lisa Wilkinson, and Lisa was extraordinary in terms of mentoring young women into many, many positions. And when I became an editor, it was always obvious in your team who really had the goods to go further, whether it even be the work experience person. And I'm proud to say that I looked at Mia Friedman, who came in on work experience. We all know where Mia is now, and was able to nurture her talent, grow it and bring it into the company. Paula Joy, who was my PA. Certainly in from an editorial perspective, we get very, very talented young people wanting to come in. We have more people wanting to join the company than we have jobs for. So it's imperative to grow those people. And as I say, many of the PAs are now editors, and some of them were my PAs, like Paula Joy and Tiffany Dunk, who's now editor of Dolly. But I think you have a responsibility to really make sure that there is a career path there. And I think everybody in this room is probably some sort of manager, and you know how much time people take up and can drain you. So it's important that the right people are in the right place, but spot the talent, nurture the talent, and give them the opportunity, and actually take the time to listen to where they want to be and help them get there. It will give you rewards in spades.
Darren.
Yeah, look, it's interesting because on Monday I was judging the IAA student competition. So there's plenty of talent and there's plenty of raw talent out there. The sad part is that with all the focus on, you know, contracting margins, and it is a cost issue because there's not the money to actually nurture talent. People are so busy doing the job that the opportunity to actually do the nurturing is not happening. The good part is that it is a meritocracy, and talent will rise, but we're not actively promoting talent or nurturing it as much as we used to.
Let's take our next question, which comes from Julian Peterson of Time Out. Over that way, microphone coming your way.
Hi there, sorry, I gave two questions. One was positive and this one's the negative
one. Perhaps ask us about the creativity and innovation.
Yes.
I didn't pick your other one.
What's the biggest factor holding back creativity and innovation in digital Australia?
So the biggest factor holding back creativity and innovation in digital Australia. Maybe start at the opposite end of the row this time with Darren.
The lack of a suitable broadband network that has capacity. Because I was in New York recently and I've travelled through Asia, and the speeds and capabilities there are infinitely greater than Australia. So I think it's the great travesty is that we have some of the worst broadband service in the world.
Deborah.
I think it's still finding ways to marry the creative guys with the technical guys. You know, they've always been divided. There's the technical guys over there and they're going to make happen what the creative guy has a vision for, girl. And I think somehow we have to break down the barriers between those two groups so that they are working together and you're able to really actualise what it is that your vision is from a creative perspective. So the marriage of the two groups.
Henry.
I agree with Deborah's comments, actually. Creativity and innovation and connection were split in 1997 when the market effectively deregulated. So the reason why there's difficulty is because different camps were created as a result of a shift in the market. So in the same way as it was effective back then with a consolidated, bundled proposition, bringing the right talent in, I think that's where we're sort of heading back.
And Mark?
I probably agree with what's been said already, but I'm not sure how much it's being held back. My experience is that I'm, you know, encouraging and seeing really fantastic thinking in that space. So, look, I think it's like in any medium and in any industry, you get good and bad. But it's still in its infancy, and I think that there's still a long way to go, not just here but globally with the whole digital medium. I think Australia tends to lag a little bit when it comes to global trends. We always seem to be a little bit behind, but I think we're getting there.
Okay, we'll take another question. This time, Jeff Estock, who I did see. There we go, right in the middle.
Hi there, Jeff Estock from Navigari. Four different industry or four different segments being represented up there. What you're looking at it on a segment basis, what do you think the biggest challenges or disappointments were in 2010, and where do you think your growth will come from in 2011?
Maybe start with Deborah on that one.
Oh, lots and lots of challenges over the last 12 months. I mean, certainly in all industries, not just the media. Obviously, for us, there's been challenges with circulation, with advertising revenue after the GFC. In terms of how we're addressing them, there's a lot of ways, I guess, and I know this is one of those words that everybody hears the word and they think, oh God, you know, not again, is integration. And that is that there's a lot of people out there, probably digital is the digital buzzword that we're constantly hearing, on what are you going to do in the digital space. The reality is that whilst we are often referred to as heritage media, the fact is that magazines, newspapers and free-to-air television are still major sources of information for Australians. If we look at magazines, a 6.2 magazines are sold every second in this country. Over a billion magazines were sold. So coming back to that $650 million spent in advertising, yet we may be put up there as some sort of anachronistic medium, and this is, I think, a real challenge for us, is reinvigorating people's interest in, obviously, magazines and from a PBL perspective, free-to-air television. I think that we're seeing that happening now. If we look at integration, we are set up, and I'm going to use PBL as the example here, to be able to not only integrate content, because magazines have done that very well over the years. It's easy for us to integrate content. It's been more difficult, perhaps, for television to do that because you have a set show and you have a certain amount of space around that show and that is it. But now when you see the fragmentation of free-to-air television with the rise of channels such as Gem and Go, you're actually sort of almost seeing niche television. Now, obviously, from our perspective as a company that has television assets, that has online assets and has magazines, we are well and truly positioned to be able to integrate across all of those different channels. And I know Lou Barrett's here today, and we've actually started up a business called Powered. And I'll give you one example. I don't know how many people saw the Meat and Livestock Australia Chop Till You Drop scenario. And that was something where a client came to us as a magazine advertiser. We created a mini magazine called Chop Till You Drop, which was a parody of one of our own magazines, Shop Till You Drop. That then became, it was then a straight television commercial. We had a TV show built around it where we had two football codes, cooking chops on the barbecue with Julie Goodwin. We had it on Kerry Ann. We had an event. We were able to really create a truly integrated promotion for Meat and Livestock Australia with lambs. So I think that integration is going to be the way forward in terms of growing the business. If you're looking at magazines and you're looking for circulation growth, I think you can forget it. It's a challenge to just hold that space. We're very, very excited by the tablets, by the growth of tablets. I think that's going to really reinvigorate the magazine market. But going back to the previous question, one of the things we have to start doing is thinking in a different space and thinking about how those magazines are going to operate in as an application. You just can't take the magazine and necessarily put it into an iPad application and expect people are going to do it. And we're obviously looking at ways to go down deeper into footage, into buy now, connecting to the internet and so on. That is extremely exciting, and I think that is really going to invigorate and grow our business and allow us to incorporate digital, to incorporate live footage, to then have that go across cross-platforms into these new television stations and so on. It's a really exciting time for media, and it's just, I guess, the barriers are, you know, how big can you go and how much money have you got? Because, of course, that's a big part of it, in a nutshell.
I love the commercial element. How much money have you got? Darren, your biggest challenges of 2010?
Yeah, look, I think we coming out of the GFC, probably because it didn't bite as deep in this market and certainly didn't bite as deep in Asia, that you'd think the opportunity is to actually try new and take risks and do things to drive the business forward. And it happens in small groups, but most people are still sitting there with an attitude of, well, we'll just keep doing what we've always done and we'll get the natural growth. And I think in markets where it's bitten much deeper, people are actually looking for new ways of doing things. And I think Australia as a country, and certainly marketing and advertising, has the opportunity of really driving change and driving innovation, because our economy is not in a hole like it is in the US and the UK. We have got amazing thinking. We've got terrific people. We've got great opportunities. But I think it's this being risk adverse is actually the thing that's standing in the way of achieving great things. I mean, on a global scale, Australia is the ultimate test market. We can do things here and prove ideas and concepts that can then be exported anywhere. But while we take a risk adverse approach, we're limited in what we can do.
Mark Collis.
What was the question?
Your biggest challenges of 2010, and how did you do?
Biggest challenges 2010. For me personally, it was moving from one industry sector to another. I think the biggest challenge that that's facing telcos globally is an identity crisis. I think that with the proliferation and fragmentation of media and content and accessibility to all sorts of communication and connections, that telcos globally are kind of really struggling to kind of give themselves an identity. So that's been something that we at Telstra have been looking at. So that's that. And for me personally, I suppose it's been about defining the brand. I came into Telstra when I think that it was a company that had a fairly ill-defined brand. So the biggest challenge for me was kind of doing that work and making sure that we've got a brand that the company is aligned with and that we can take to market in a meaningful way.
And how did you do?
Well, we haven't done it yet, so we're still in that process now. So we're doing well. I think we've defined the brand, we've done all that work, so it's about kind of bringing that to life over the next 6 to 12 months.
And Henry?
I think that the biggest challenge this year has been for the whole market to manage the pace of growth. We haven't seen double-digit growth at a market level for about 15 years. What the market got used to was a steady pace of the 3s to 5s. The market is a different place when it's growing at 15-20%, and in some sectors, even higher. Moving forward, the challenge is going to be to recalibrate back to normal growth and to repace ourselves so that we don't fall over. And that's something that the whole industry needs to sort of have a think about. And that largely sort of manifests itself in managing expectations from clients, from individuals in businesses, and also for the media to set themselves realistic targets for their own businesses. Deborah used I didn't know you were going to use the MLA example. that's actually one of the clients within Medibrands at UM. And the key insight to integration is breaking rules. And it's sort of, if you think of breaking rules in the context of everything else that is changing around us, if media companies, together with marketers and the stakeholders that represent and support, you know, those brands don't look at ways to break rules, then we won't grow. We'll actually regress over time, and you know that innovation and integration that really does stand out won't be championed, and businesses won't prosper as a result of that. So that's my sum up.
We'll take one more pre-moderated question, and then there'll be a chance to come out with a spontaneous one. So do start thinking about that. Reading Rooms, Kathy McGinn.
What were your best and worst moments from your job of the last year?
Start with you this time, Mark. So the best and worst thing about doing your job in 2010?
The best thing was getting the job. At Telstra, I'd been in the creative space in advertising for a very long time, and had for a long time felt that that space for me personally wasn't offering enough challenge and the ability to kind of actually have a positive impact on people. So being able to move into Telstra in my role has been an absolute fantastic opportunity. The worst moment is getting a job at Telstra. It's a very big beast, and it has a very ingrained culture. And you know, the challenges there are real, and they're big, and they're apparent. But you know, it's something that I really, really enjoy, and I love that challenge. So yeah, it's kind of both.
Henry.
I think the best moment happens pretty regularly. I think we're really privileged to work in an industry that is about what we do, and it's a people-based industry. So the best part of it is actually experiencing and being on the journey with the people you work with, and getting the results. I haven't had a worse moment this year. I was a bit worried that I couldn't answer that, but I'm not sure whether I've just sort of put an omen on myself, but. I've been really delighted with this year's progress. Probably the worst moment was the first half of this year, getting to the point where the people at Sydney Kingston Smith Airport knew me by first name before I rocked up to the counter, and that was largely because I was travelling too much. But this year's been actually a stellar year in my view.
Deborah.
I have to say the best moment for me, I'm like Henry, I just love my job, I've been doing it for years, but probably the best moment for me this year was when our company became one company. We had been broken into two groups. We were broken into Women's Lifestyle and Men's and Specialist magazines, and Phil Scott took over and we became one company. So the highlight for me was being able to work across the company. So suddenly I was not only interested in shoes and bags, I was also very interested in the car of the year. And I got to, the highlight, I suppose, was hosting with Phil and emceeing the motoring dinner, which was a real sort of treat for me. It's on the eve of the motor show. It was presented by Top Gear, Motor and Wheels. And I was asked to do that. So it was a whole different ball game, and I really, really enjoyed working across those different magazines. Probably one of the difficult things was interviewing the new editor of Wheels, Bill Thomas, because I'd been told, no car jokes, Deborah. We just don't want to hear. We've had Channel 9 people before and they crack jokes about cars and these guys don't want to know about it. So I'm interviewing Bill about cars and what was the best car he's driven, and he's answering me. I had a fixed smile on my face because I clearly knew nothing what he was saying, but I had the questions prepared. Worst moment, I would have to say, if you'd asked me this any other year when I've always been editing, it always is the same answer, interviewing Russell Crowe. Because every year, every worst moment in my career has unfortunately been related to interviewing Russell Crowe. So I didn't interview Russell Crowe over the last year, so I'm trying to think what the worst moment was, and I probably don't really have one, I'm disappointed to say.
I think we'll take Russell Crowe.
We'll take Russell Crowe. Maybe I'll hopefully be at dinner with Russell soon and I can reinforce that that is the worst moment for 2010 yet again.
Darren, any disastrous celebrity encounters to share?
No celebrities. But this year's been a really good year from the perspective of being able to grow the business globally, and having some really challenging and fascinating discussions with marketing directors in places as diverse as Delhi and London or Hong Kong and Guangzhou, and realising that they all have the same problem, no matter where they are in the world. So, you know, you start thinking, well, actually, I've done this before in a small scale. All we need to do is scale it up. So, you know, I think I was a little daunted by the idea, but by the end of the year, I've come to realise that everyone has the same problems. The worst is probably landing in Delhi on a flight from London, having flown economy, because it was the only seat I can get, landing at 5 o'clock in the morning. And there was 2 weeks before the Commonwealth Games were starting, and they only had two immigration officers on for a flight of over 300 people. So it was this, after this long flight, this big long queue. And then I suddenly realised that I have this APEC business traveller's card, which doesn't apply to India, but I thought I'd try it. So they had a diplomatic channel, and I walked up with all the bravado I could muster and handed my passport and my APEC card, and the guy looked at it quizzically, probably figured that, you know, I was some petty bureaucrat that was going to create him a problem, stamped my passport and I went straight through. So I managed to turn a bad situation into a good one.
Do the mere art of blagging. Let's take a question. Oh,
very
quick hand there. Let's get the microphone up in that direction.
Hi, Simone Drury from Mango DDB. Deb, you work in publishing, I work in PR. They're both, I think, pretty good industries for women to rise to the top. However, working within the creative industry, I still see a real lack of women in senior positions in creative agencies and actually in sort of marketing, sort of CMO positions. I wondered if anybody had a point of view on that.
Yeah, maybe start with Deborah on that one.
I think probably better, you know, you're right, because in our industry, women do rise to the top a lot more. I'd rather hear what the blokes had to say first, if that's okay, Tim.
Yeah, and then we'll come back and we'll get your ambitions to be the CEO of PBL at the end of that conversation. Start with Mark.
My boss is Kate McKinsey. She's the CMO for Telstra. Dean is the GMD for business. Nerida is the GMD for Telstra Enterprise and Government. Catherine Livingston is our board director. I think of all the companies that I've worked in, I think Telstra has quite an amazing track record with women in leadership roles. Pretty much the head of HR is a woman. In fact, I feel like I'm in a minority in those senior positions. But I take your point on from the creative side. I think that there is definitely a lack of women in senior roles in that space. And I've been asked this question a number of times in my career, and I can't really work out what the answer is. I'm not quite sure why that is. So I'm afraid I can't give you any kind of clever response to that. But as I said, within the business that I'm in now, women are certainly in very, very powerful positions. And I think that's, from what I understand from reading the press, that that's happening more and more. I think women in leadership positions are becoming much more, you know, visible. But yeah, the creative thing, I really don't know what it is about the creative thing. Maybe that men are just more creative than women.
So maybe give Simone the chance to come back on that in a minute if we leave the microphone with that on that one. In the meantime, I'll come to Henry. Certainly, looking at media agencies, there are not many female CEOs of media agencies.
I agree. I actually think it's a problem. With respect to the media agency sector, 60% of the media agency employees and staff are women. So, just a quick count, there's only one agency in Australia that has female leadership, and that's I'm not trying to take credit for this, but
who appointed that person?
Who would that be?
We recently made some changes to the initiative media agency, which is part of Mediabrands, and when looking around for the best talent to deliver, you know, what that business needed, we turned to Tracy Michael, who is a one of the women leaders in the industry, and we've continued that theme. And you know, things have happened in such a great way since that appointment that we have a head of strategy that's female. We've got the majority of directors in that business that are female, and the business is actually really starting to turn around. So I think there's that has proven to be a bit of a gap in the market. And what we will look for is opportunities to seek out female CMOs and female CEOs and give them that point of difference. So the way to do something about it is to do something about it. And I think you raise a valid point, Simone.
My turn. I think it's appalling. And I think that, you know, and all due respect to Telstra, and you mentioned one person who was on the board. Now, that is one woman on the board, and I guarantee the other nine are blokes. And I remember being with Julie Bishop when she was when the Liberal Party were in, and she got up at an event that we were sponsoring for women and made a big song and dance about the fact that the number of women, it was 9% of boards had women on them. And I sat down and said, Julie, where did you get that figure? Because you've obviously included all of the boards where people are not paid. And if you look at all of the non-paid boards, you'll find that it's all the women that are on those boards, and all of the boards where they are paid, there's very few women. The numbers are still very, very low. And I think there's two factors at play here. One is it's the old boys network is a really big part of that, and bringing their mates in. Mate, you've retired from BHP, or your ex-Brambles, let's bring him in. It's all of that sort of thing going on. And I was amazed. I was at a Women on Boards meeting, and two things happened. One is there was a board, and it remained nameless, but basically all of the products they had were sold to women. They were a fashion company. They did not have one woman on the board. I found that extraordinary. Probably even more surprising was when Fairfax didn't have one media person on the board, but that, you know, that happens. And then a guy who was there who knew me, he would actually come to me a while ago, and he was heading up an MBA, one of the university's MBA sectors, projects, and he said, oh, how are we going to get more women doing MBAs? Obviously, from a financial perspective, he said something appalling to me that night. He said, oh, look at all these women here. They all want to be on boards just because they're women. And I said, you've got to be kidding. You know, it's not really just because they're women. It's because they have something to offer, particularly to boards that are absolutely aimed at female customers. Now, without kind of going on, because I could go on about this for hours and hours, the other thing I have to say, though, is with women, and a lot of CEOs I know, female CEOs, say that this is one of the big problems is women are not very good at putting themselves forward. If there's a role in the company that they want, they tend to wait for someone to come and get them as opposed to putting their hand up. We're not as proactive as we should be in going and seeing senior management and outlining the fact that we want to be there. We just hope that when we work really hard and work harder than most, someone's going to come and tap us on the shoulder. Women need to be more proactive in terms of promoting themselves and putting themselves forward to management and showing what they can do. Quite often it is the work of women that is taken forward perhaps by somebody else. Maybe the creative idea came from the woman. She's not going to get the job, but she's doing the job, and I think we need to put our hands up and say, hey, we're doing the job and we should be considered for the next level up.
Darren.
Well, look, certainly from a board level, you're right, Deborah. I think, though, from a marketing level, from a client perspective, there are certainly more women working in senior roles in marketing. And this is a big issue for advertising agencies, because we've run a number of pitches in the last 12 months where the team from the marketing side is all women. And then the agencies turn up time and time again with the boys' club, and you can just see there's this mismatch of communication. What one person's saying, the other person's not listening to. You know, and it happens time and time again. The only agency that got it really wrong was that they had one woman, and she was so obviously token because she actually made sure that all the boys had a cup of tea and she organised all their chairs before they sat down. And that was the worst thing they could have possibly done. But it is a real issue. And agencies do need to, as Henry said, proactively start looking for the opportunities of promoting women, to Deb, to your point, on a meritocracy rather than just who puts themselves forward.
Sam, do you want to come back on that point?
Yeah, I agree, Deb, 100% with you. I think that things are moving forward with women in leadership. From a creative perspective, I find it very interesting that I think still coming out of university, it's still majority of guys that are taking sort of creatively led courses. I think women are still looking for leadership roles, but not necessarily on the creative side. I don't believe that men are more creative than women, and we may go about things in a slightly different way, but I think that we've got equal amounts to put on the table.
For the record, do you want to expand on that comment at all, Mark?
No, I was being flippant.
I thought I probably should give you the chance to
point that out. I hope no one was taking me seriously about that, but I think Deborah made an interesting point about the psychology of women. I don't know what it is, if it is that women kind of aren't as forthcoming and as kind of aggressive about getting to powers, to positions of leadership. I don't know, because I can't speak to that point. And it is, you know, I personally don't have... I don't want to be on the spot about this. It's such a tricky question. When you're a bloke to be talking about, I feel uncomfortable talking about it because it puts you into this kind of man-woman kind of thing. So the question itself is kind of so loaded that it's really difficult to kind of have an objective, you know, anything you say from a man's perspective is going to be seen from a woman's perspective in a completely different way.
That was the first part of Mumbrella's most recent question time. We'll bring you the rest of the event at next week's podcast.